Recording in progress.
What's going on, everybody? Live from our respective places of being. Welcome to the Brown Sports Convos podcast, Zoom edition once again. And here we are. It's been a little bit. The finals have happened. The Olympics are starting. Also, the draft is in like 3 days or something. I looked up and I was like, what? That's when it is? Yeah, stuff is happening and we're here to talk about it. How are you guys feeling, first of all? Let's go around. Who am I with?
TJ Kim up in here. It's been a while. I'm feeling pretty good.
Ethan Jousen. It's okay. It's okay. Could be better. Could be worse.
Derek Reeves here. A little tired, going to be honest. About the end of my... I'm still in school. About the end of my semester. Right. Ready to be done.
I think it's one of those days. And it's certainly one of those days for the U.S. men's basketball team. They just lost to France in the group stage. That's we can talk about that a little bit later. First, let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. They're NBA champions, on top of the world. They brought Brandon Jennings to the championship parade, the guy who said Bucks in six all those years ago. My first thing off the bat, super, super, super happy for that city, and specifically Giannis Antetokounmpo, who obviously won finals MVP. He's come a long, long way, and I'm just really happy for him. He has accomplished a lot, and I feel like he doesn't really get the respect that he's due sometimes within the league for what he's able to do, because people look at him and they're like, oh, well, you know, he's not really a creator, a shot creator. You know, I wouldn't play him in 2K. He just runs and dunks, as the famous James Harden quote goes. But hey, I think that he's a super hardworking guy. He's a very likable guy, and I'm really happy that he has this accomplishment so early in his career.
If I could go off of that real quick, I do kind of want to talk about Giannis and kind of how he tears out as a player to me, or how I kind of historically look at him. I really do think he's, like, you can, I guess, make the argument that, like, James Harden was making, which is that he just runs and dunks, but I feel like that's very simplistic, and it's also not understanding that that is, the fact that he can get away with just doing that at such a high level is...
If you're doing that and scoring 36 per game in the NBA finals, like, that's more an indictment of the rest of the league than it is of him, right? Because that's saying he doesn't need to do anything else.
That too, yeah. In my mind, there's only really a few players. There's one about every 30 or so years that can really do that. It's the list is, in my mind, basically Wilt Chamberlain, Shaquille O'Neal, and now Giannis. All
just
of whom were
physically superior to everybody else on the basketball
court. Everyone on that court is a freak, like, athletically. These are the uber duper super crazy freaks who are freaks squared, basically.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got to talk about the free throws. Obviously, he was struggling in the first couple of rounds on a lot of areas, but the main one was his free throws. And in that closeout game, game six, he scores 50. 17 of those points are from the free throw line. He goes 17 for 19. That's a huge jump up from getting a 10-second violation round one and all of this stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. With Giannis, watching him the last couple games, you know, it's a cliche, and they always say this, but he really did want it more than other players, man. You could just kind of see a look in his eyes that he just, like he was super serious the whole game.
To jump off of that really quick,
yeah,
I felt that way about Chris Paul in the conference finals, in game six, especially against the Clippers. That man was on a mission. I've never seen somebody so determined, and he was just taking over possessions. He's 36 years old, and he was doing things that a lot of younger players aren't even doing in terms of his aggressiveness, in terms of getting to his spots. As an undersized point guard, I think it was so impressive to see that from him, and it just looked like he didn't have that gas in the later half of that Bucks series. And Giannis did. He brought the energy. He brought the willpower for sure. And then we have to talk about his defense, because Drew Holiday was doing a fantastic job on Chris Paul. But I think that the real thing for the Suns was they did not have an answer for the interior presence that Giannis provided. We can talk a lot about that block where he turns around mid-lob and blocks DeAndre Ayton on the way up. I think that was just such a testament to not only his physical prowess, but his understanding, his instincts of where the ball's going and what he's got to do about it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, there was I think, at least I thought going into it, that DeAndre Ayton was like, oh, you know, we're going to see, like, you know, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, the beginning of their, like, Shaq and Kobe, you know, sort of thing. You know, they're going to, you know, be the new force in the NBA. And then Giannis was all like, no. I mean, it was very clear that Giannis is a two-time MVP and Ayton's just kind of coming off his rookie year. And we really saw the difference there.
Like, yeah, I kind of wanted to jump off of that. I really thought that you were seeing in these playoffs the ways that narratives can kind of be formed, like, prematurely a bit. Like, I think the narrative around Giannis before the finals, I think, was very different than after he came back from that injury and played out of his mind. Mm-hmm. And then kind of the reverse can be seen a bit with DeAndre Ayton. I saw a lot of takes about how good he was. And to his credit, he was great for a lot of that playoff run. It wasn't even terrible the entire finals. But people talking about, like, wow, you can't see it as a disappointment that you got taken over Luka and Trey. I think at this point we could say that you would have rather had Luka or Trey that series than DeAndre Ayton. Not that you might not have a really great...
I think that's a bit reactionary, honestly. I think that's a little bit of a recency bias thing. Because for me... So I was kind of a DeAndre Ayton detractor for a long time, but I think the reason that I was so impressed with him throughout those playoffs was because in the past, even this season, he just didn't have that fire on defense that we saw a lot of the time in the playoffs. He took possessions off. He was a little bit unfocused at times, and we knew he had the physical prowess. We knew that he had the instincts, honestly, because he had flashes even in college, but... For me, what I saw was a guy who was incredibly disciplined on defense, a big who did not foul a lot, especially on shooters. I think that was a big deal to him being able to shut down Anthony Davis in the couple of games that they were able to play against each other. And I think that it was really impressive. He even had a good series against Nikola Jokic, who was the reigning MVP, obviously. And I think was a big part of why that series was so decisive in favor of the Suns. Yeah, I mean, I think that part of the thing was that without a lot of size on that team, it's really difficult for that team to match up specifically with Giannis Antetokounmpo, because what Ayton does is he is really good at closing out big shooters and things like that. That's not really what Giannis was doing, and he was really taking it to the hole and attacking him. And I think you can't really blame DeAndre Ayton for not having the ability to keep up with that, because I don't think that there's anybody in the league who can right now, at least not to the degree that would have been necessary to really slow him down in that situation. And I don't think the Suns were really equipped defensively to deal with him in general.
Yeah, I didn't mean this just as trying to disrespect DeAndre Ayton and the skill set he brings, but I think what I meant more is that I think you alluded to that his skill set is a specific niche of being able to defend in a certain way that doesn't work against the top echelon. I'm just talking about the takes that were like the most excessive takes, I'd say, that were saying that he's on the level of these superstars from his draft class. I think that's where I disagree. I think I more so bring up DeAndre Ayton, though, because I kind of don't think that I'm as down on Chris Paul after these finals as a lot of people. If you look at what he was putting up statistically, he was really not that bad at all.
I think in the finals he was disappointing, though.
How would you say so?
Part of it, obviously, he had trouble efficiently getting his shot to fall. I think the big difference that we saw from Game 3 onwards was Drew Holiday was guarding him, and so it was very difficult for him to get comfortable, get to his spots. You even mentioned this in the group chat. He has these sort of pull-up mid-ranges that he really likes, and Holiday was doing a fantastic job at forcing him out of those spots. And I think that without that, Paul was really struggling to not only find his spots, but also get some people involved. I think a really especially disappointing game, one that comes to mind, is Game 4. And I don't remember what play it was exactly, but there was a point there where I said to myself, it just doesn't look like he's ready to be here. And it was so shocking to say that, because the whole playoffs, he was a transformative presence every time he stepped on the court. And I just didn't feel like that was the case in, I think it was game four. And that was one that the Bucks won narrowly. It was a dogfight. I think they only ended up winning by six. I have the box score up here right now. Yeah, he went 5 for 13 with only 10 points and 7 assists. I think, yeah, one of the big difference makers was that Paul was a little bit less aggressive in the latter half of the series, partially because of the defense of Drew Holiday, and a lot of credit to him for that. But I thought he was a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I would say I think that a big difference was the Bucks 2 and 3 guys. And I think we all said that, like, at their peak, they had the most talent in the playoffs ever since got to what, the conference finals, and a lot of the preseason favorites were eliminated. I think that when you have Giannis playing like at an MVP level, and you have Chris Middleton playing as peak Chris Middleton, and you have Drew Holiday playing peak Drew Holiday on defense and, like, inconsistent, but finally showing up when it mattered on offense, it's pretty hard.
It's a big shot.
I think I saw a stat that said that this was one of the best true shooting percentages on this kind of volume for a team that lost a game in the finals for the Suns. So I think, yeah, there are things that the Suns could have done better. But I think I just don't have this this feeling that, oh, this series was about Chris Paul leaving it on the board versus it was just kind of the circumstances that
Certainly not. I think at their peak, yeah, like you said, the Bucks were more talented. One of the things that actually came to fruition that I was a little bit concerned about was when these injuries started piling up for the Suns. Like, Kaminsky was out for, I think, a torn Achilles, and Saric was the guy who had the injury.
Saric is a tough one, for sure.
Right. I think Saric, you know, it's hard to say Dario Saric is a difference maker, but I think when your backup center becomes Torrey Craig, and then DeAndre Ayton is suddenly struggling with foul trouble for the first time in the whole playoffs, and you don't have a backup big over 6'7", that's rough. That's tough to deal with when you have to go against these supersized Milwaukee Bucks, right? I think that they were.
Yeah, when you were talking about, like, DeAndre Ayton doing a good job, but kind of running into the hacksaw that is Giannis, I think there's a significant amount to be thought about with DeAndre Ayton was basically playing, maybe not the whole game, but like that, like he was the one person who could even do any sort of job there realistically, and the one big they had on the team, right? Other than, I mean, are you going to put Frank Kaminsky in? That's not
Kaminsky minutes were really bad.
Yeah, no, for sure. Maybe not the best idea. So
we saw from Saric that he was not great, but he was a stopgap. He was a guy that was able to give Ayton like 5 to 10 minutes on a bench and like not completely blow up and stuff. For sure. You know? And you're not asking too much from him on offense. Just hit some open shots. I think you're asking a lot from Torrey Craig on both ends if you have him there. And it was really tough for them to deal with that size, I think.
I do agree that I think, as it often is, depth is an underrated part of this series. You tend to think about the big threes or big twos on these teams. It's easy to forget, like, the Brook Lopez's, and then even more to think about, like, the Bobby Portis's, unless you're a Milwaukee fan.
Oh, nobody could guard Bobby Portis on the Phoenix.
PJ Tucker, those things can make
Arkansas resident Bobby Portis.
Ooh, I mean, shout out. Like, all finals wins are team wins. Even the ones that are big three, there's always lots of people who contribute. Mm-hmm. But like this one especially, I think because there was such a big gap, I think, between Giannis and the rest. Mm-hmm. You really saw the whole team come together. At least in my mind, like,
playoffs came down to injuries in a lot of ways. They were characterized by them in a lot of ways.
I mean, their
lack of Jamal Murray really hurt the Nuggets in that series.
Yeah. We kind of forgot about it because of all the greatness that was going with these finals, and we had two, you know, good and pretty healthy teams going against each other.
Yeah.
And because we all, you know, also, I think we all would have been pretty happy with either team winning. They're pretty likable teams. But there was a lot of, right before they started, everyone was like, oh, you know, these teams are here, especially the Bucks, because they're the only healthy ones, and all the other good teams are injured.
you know, there's some major fatal flaw about them.
Yeah.
Not to say that, like, of course.
They don't get there without huge performances from Chris Middleton, who has been up and down his whole career, except for when he's playing against the Boston Celtics, specifically in the playoffs. I mean, ultimately, the team that won was the healthiest team. I don't think there's any getting around that. Giannis had his knee bent the wrong way like 2 weeks before the finals. And he still played really well. It looked like he wasn't hurt at all. And that was insane to me. I didn't even think he was going to play in game one, but he ultimately ended up being fine. And some teams didn't have that luxury. Their best players or their second best players were lost to injury. And that was unfortunate. You want to see teams play at their best, but every championship team gets lucky in some way. And I think, we give you and me, Ethan, we give Mike Budenholzer a lot of crap. Mind out in these last couple of rounds of the playoffs, especially against the Hawks and the Suns. I think that he made good adjustments, which is hard for me to say, but like that's a first that we saw from him. I think the way he utilized Brook Lopez in the Hawks series just completely changed the tides of it. The Nets series. I think the way that he utilized Drew Holiday changed. I don't know why he wasn't on Chris Paul from game one, but as soon as he put Drew Holiday on Chris Paul, that series changed. And there was good stuff coming out from the bench, from the coaching corner. So, I mean, credit to the Bucks. They did good things, and they won.
I mean, I have always thought that Budenholzer is a good coach when he doesn't outsmart himself. And luckily, he managed to not outsmart himself at the right time.
Giannis played like 46 minutes per game. We haven't seen that from a Budenholzer best player in a long time.
Yep.
No. I also want to point out that the Bucks weren't the only healthy team. They weren't the only healthy contender. The 76ers were healthy, you know?
Okay, the Sixers suck, and I've been saying they do, for a while.
But, I mean, people thought they were a contender coming in, right? You know what I mean? I mean, and like, yeah, you definitely got some attrition. You know, the Celtics obviously had some attrition. And on the West side, there was definitely a lot of it with Nuggets, Lakers.
Clippers
with Kawhi just going down.
He was going out of his mind too. Yeah. He was probably the best player in the playoffs until he got injured.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think Giannis has a strong contention to it. I think you're right. Kawhi, I think, was the best player up to that point. Yeah,
because Giannis had a rough couple of first rounds, and especially in that Heat series, they almost won it independent of his performance. He wasn't that good in that Heat series, and they still swept. So, Kawhi's injury especially hurts because, and this is kind of a transition, the offseason is coming up and he's a free agent. He has a player option available to him, but he's going to be out for a significant portion of time. And he's got to make some decisions, and then front offices around the league have to make some decisions about how they want to approach that free agency, because if he chooses to pick up his player option, that's a good amount of money, but is he going to be able to get back into a form where he's able to find a long-term deal going forward? Because we know that this is kind of what we have to expect from Kawhi at this point, is that there's going to be something going on with that leg for a while, that there's a significant possibility that he's going to be missing some time. And he's one of the big names on the free agent market right now. There aren't a lot. I think that Chris Paul's probably spoken for with the Phoenix Suns. I would be very surprised if he ended up moving. And the other name that comes to mind is like Kyle Lowry. There are some rumors about him and DeMar DeRozan reuniting in LA, which would just make me sick to my stomach, but that's going on. But other than that, there aren't a lot of strictly available free agents that are on the market right now. I would say Kawhi Leonard is still the big fish in that pool, and he just tore his ACL, a partial tear.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get a much bigger fish than Kawhi. I mean, that's a list of about, I mean, how many guys can you think of that were the best player on a championship team? Realistically, it's not a very long list.
Yeah, but I think that at this point in his career, we have seen that he's had knee troubles, that he's had leg troubles, and it's always the right leg, and that it's been a major factor in preventing him from playing in a lot of ways, and that came to fruition this season, and it's kind of come to fruition in seasons past as well. There's certainly a risk to signing Kawhi Leonard, I think.
I agree. It just makes it a weird spot in general where it's like theoretically he's probably the best on the market, and yet also he's probably not someone that anyone's going to take enough of a shot on for it to be worth his time to
actually take a player option. But, you know, in what capacity is a big question mark here.
So also, does he want to leave at this point? Given that Paul George had a pretty good playoffs. Like,
shout out to Paul George.
Yeah. No. I feel like I would be I can't speak for Kawhi, obviously, but I'd be a lot more optimistic about this Clippers core this year than I was last year.
We were burying them last time we spoke. And then they just made this incredible run. We had a Terrence Mann game. I didn't even know who Terrence Mann was prior to this season.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
But, I mean, from what I saw from him, I think that guy's got a long career ahead of him. And, you know, but we've kind of seen this story before, is where this star player sits out a significant portion of time, and then the rest of the team kind of figure stuff out without him during the regular season, but then you try to plug him back in later on, or maybe right as you enter the playoffs, and there's a little bit of confusion about roles and who takes what shots and stuff like that. I think it's possible that, you know, you should be happy if you're the LA Clippers. You lost your best player and you still almost made the finals. You weren't that far away. And made the conference finals for the first time in your franchise's history. You found some promising young talent, but they've got mouths to feed. Reggie Jackson is a free agent as well, and he balled out this playoffs. He was, I think, crucial for the Clippers making it that far. It felt like he couldn't miss a shot for a while there.
Yeah. I think this is an interesting place that the NBA is in now with such a weird year. When I think about trying to put the Milwaukee's championship into context, kind of think a little bit about that the Bad Boys era a little, even though I know they're known a lot for their playing style, but in terms of the fact that they kind of existed in that time between eras where they won a couple championships, but they're not really thought of as like defining an era. And especially too, I think a lot of people talk about how like Isaiah Thomas at his peak is like one of the most underrated players ever. Like he was right up there with a lot of those stars. I think about that a little with Giannis's legacy too, and that I think he is right up there in the discussion with all these all-time legends, but it just bears to see, like with how it ended up with those Pistons, can the Bucks continue to be a factor even when all these injured players and injured teams are at full health, or was this just a blip on the radar? And I think this offseason, I'm almost more interested in like teams getting healthy than I am in whether there's going to be a big offseason shakeup.
Can I just say how nuts it is that we're having this discussion about Giannis, though? This is a guy who has won two MVPs. He was a most improved player. He won a Defensive Player of the Year trophy the same year that he won the MVP. I think this is one of the elite players in our league. He's like a top three guy right now.
Absolutely. Top two.
We have let Ag Twitter talk us into thinking that this guy is empty stats. This is just an analytics thing, right? Like, oh, he's efficient, but what else? He can't win a finals with him. This is obscene.
Oh,
if you're talking like this about Shaquille O'Neal 20 years ago, I think that like any basketball player worth their salt would tell us to go jump in a lake. But for some reason, I think that there's this perception. I think it's partially because of players like James Harden. I think it's partially because there is right now that values, are you like Carmelo Anthony? Can you make your own shot, get your own shot whenever you want to? Forget whether it's like going in more than half the time or not, but can you shots off the dribble? And that's what people value. That's
Giannis,
that's not the player that he is.
Dunking because you're tall gets old after a while. Also, people can't pretend to be you on the court. No. Anyone can pretend to be Harden or these guys. You can't, you know.
If I could argue.
Yeah.
If I could argue.
Relatable.
I think it has to do, honestly, not just with like the play style. I think it has to do with like everyone else knows each other for like 15 years. And Giannis is just this random Greek guy who showed up out of nowhere and was like playing in YMCA gyms until he was like 19. And then he showed up in the NBA and he was 7'2 and super long and no one could guard him. And that kind of pisses all of them off because they don't really know him. He seems like a nice guy, but like, like everybody else has been like their best friend. They've all been best friends for like 10 years. They all grew up with
him. They all know
each other. Here's the thing. It makes me nervous as a Celtics fan because I love Jason Tatum and I know everybody in the league thinks Jason Tatum's going to be really great. But like, is this the kind of thing where it's like, oh, you've just been seeing Jason Tatum since you were like 13 years old. So you love that kid. But like, I watch him and it's like, yeah, this guy's going to be good forever. There's not going to be a point in his life where he can't score this basketball. But it's like, that's the kinds of conversations that we have about very specific kinds of players who have very specific places in the league and sort of the brotherhood and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And also like,
yeah,
if I can, Sam, like there's plenty of, okay. The best example is the freaking Zion, right? Because like, there are these people who like, I remember watching Zion high school tapes. We all watched them. And we watched Zion college tapes when he was at Duke. And then when he came to the NBA, we were like, oh, yeah.
He's on the Pelicans, TJ.
No, I'm not saying he's bad. No. He's fine. He's a good player. He's a great player. But, like, he gets so much, like, hype. I mean, he's on the cover of 2K. He's in every commercial. He's like, you know, like.
I think it's hard to be hyped for a player that's on the Pelicans is right, my counter argument.
But there's so much
hype.
Don't worry,
he won't be there long.
And,
yeah, like, exactly.
Like, you know. Okay, Giannis gets plenty of hype, obviously, now, especially now. But, like, you know, when he was winning the MIP and doing stuff that no one – he didn't have this hype train following him. He didn't come through the college system in the same way that all the other guys do.
It's just – and this might be the statistics major in me, but maybe, just maybe, people who look at stats instead of just like, oh, flashy moves on the court – kind of know what they're talking about every now and then, you know? Because people have been saying this about Nikola Jokic since 2016. People have been saying this about Giannis since 2015. And people didn't listen until they started doing, like, highlightable worthy stuff. Until Bleacher Report was like, all right, well, this is cool enough. We can put this on our Instagram.
And again, I want to argue the two guys you just pointed out, again, are the guys who are showing up from the middle of nowhere Europe where nobody knows them. And they're just like showing up at the league and just being like, Jokic is just like the reincarnation of Larry Bird, but taller somehow. And he's like, he doesn't jump. He doesn't really move. He can pass wherever. He's kind of out of shape.
Like,
I'm going to say,
as someone who is not very good at playing basketball, who doesn't really, like, okay, like, I play tennis, right? Like, I understand there's different levels to a sport, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can just not know how to play it at all, basically, and watch it and appreciate it that way and say, oh, that looks cool. But then once you get to know, like, to play it a little bit, you start to sort of appreciate the things these guys do a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to your average, weekend warrior basketball player, you know, I don't know, like watching guys like Harden and Kyrie is nice because it's the stuff you do in your practice court, and then and the stuff you like to do, you dribble and you shoot, mm-hmm. right? And these guys are just a little better at it than you.
That brings me to what I wanted to say, I also think part of this is bias against bigs.
I got one more thing.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, go ahead, TJ.
That being said, as a total novice to basketball, watching Giannis do flying dunks and shit, like, and stuff like that, like, where he's just clearly superior to everyone else on the court, like, just taller and also more athletic, I like watching that a lot. I think mm-hmm. that's great. Like, analytics aside, I think it's very entertaining. My guess is that a lot of these bad takes are people who kind of know basketball but don't, like, really know.
I'm going to put a pin in that. Yeah. Ethan, go ahead.
I just also wanted to say, like, for the last 40 years in the league, basically, I also think it's about bias against bigs. It goes to what TJ says about wanting to see yourself in these guys. People just find it less entertaining to see. I think this might have fueled kind of Giannis's, like, different transformations as a player. Like, people just, like, don't respect, for some reason, being able to be, like, huge and muscle your way and get buckets in the paint, even if you're getting it efficiently. Even Shaq, who you mentioned, who's probably like the exception to that over that time period, people at the time gave him respect. But then the second he is out of the league, suddenly you see a ton of slander about him. And see, oh, Shaq, here's why Shaq wasn't that great. Here's why Shaq needed help. All this kind of nonsense when, like, yeah, these players can be dominant forces. You saw that. If there's one thing that's nice about this season, it's that all the people who complained, oh, well, this game is just about three-pointers now. No, you were seeing all these different skill sets come back.
And, I mean, you saw the same thing with, like, the difference between kind of Dirk Nowitzki's legacy and Tim Duncan's legacy. And I love both those players. They're among, like, my top 10 favorite players of all time. Kobe and
Duncan, too.
Oh, yeah. But, like, I get that people aren't super excited seeing Tim Duncan pull down, like, 15 boards a game and have these crazy bank shots that he just does over and over again and in the exact same way because he's practiced it that way more than a million times, probably. But, like, people don't give that kind of crap to Nowitzki a lot of the time. And I think it's because he had, like, this bag, right? Bag Twitter can appreciate that. But, TJ, kind of to your point about, like, Weekend Warriors and how you think this might come from people who are less knowledgeable about basketball, my theory, I think some of this comes from the players themselves. I think some of this is, like, players are excited when they see something that they consider skillful or skill testing and skill rewarding. So, like, they look at a seven-footer, obviously incredibly physically gifted guy like Kevin Durant, but they see that, oh, but he has a beautiful dribble motion. He has a beautiful jump shot that he's worked on over and over again, and he can get to his spots from anywhere. And they're like, yeah, he's cool. We like him. And then they look at, like, Steph Curry, and they're like, yeah, he's got handles. He can finish at the rim. He's got a beautiful shot. Oh, he's cool. We like him. And you get to somebody like Giannis Antetokounmpo, like John Collins, honestly. I think John Collins has been kind of disrespected recently, but yeah, and people only kind of really saw it in the playoffs.
In any sport where there's, like, a lot of, like, this variance in the physical stature of different players, you know, which is almost all sports, but
people still love Jamal Crawford. They think he should have an MVP.
Like tennis as an example, because it's what I know. But, like, there are always going to be, you know, more players who are more power, players who are more finesse, players who are more skill, players who more talent, whatever. To be a truly great player, even if you are really gifted, you know, like a Giannis or last, like, really, you know, tennis player was Andy Roddick. Like, if you don't bring the game that you play, you know, it doesn't have to be the game everyone else plays, but the game you play to some kind of artistic form, there's a lot of skill in it. I'm sure, you know, listening to, like, the great rebounders talk about rebounding, it's not just jumping up and being tall. Like, you have to read the basketball, you have to read the defender. There's a whole thing that goes into it. Yeah. So, like, the guys who really, really put their, you know, not just their body, but, like, their whole mental, emotional thing into it, like, that's how you really get a great player. And if, you know, some people looks different, but I think that to say that Giannis isn't as skillful or as artistic, I guess, as someone like Steph or Kyrie, I think it's to not really understand the game. Now, that being said, there are people who are just tall and just dunk and don't have a lot of skill, but those people can't win MVPs because they don't have that expert level. Like, there's this John Isner can't actually win a major championship, you know, even though he's just big and serves really hard. He can go kind of far, but he doesn't have that extra level of skill that you need to, you know, be good. It'd be great.
We've talked about Shaq a bunch of times, right? And, like, I think Shaq has been very disrespected over the course of, like, kind of looking at it as, like, oh yeah, Shaq, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, like, Hack a Shaq, for example. It's like he couldn't hit a free throw. You know what I mean? And it's like, well, yes, but also he could be the best player on your team when you were, like, winning a championship in that season for 15 years probably, and, like, that's not something.
Someone to make free throws, like, there's so many guys who are good at free throws.
Yeah, like, don't let him take free throws at the end of the game. Have him in for the other, I don't know, 44 minutes, and let him dunk.
Right, he made free throws when they mattered, just like Giannis did.
Yeah, like, and, like, in the playoffs, he still put up, like, 50 and 20 and 5 blocks. I was like, okay, well, I guess you win.
That we didn't see until the finals.
Yeah.
He won 4 championships. People act like...
He was the best player on 4 championship teams.
including with Dwayne Wade was like 24. He made the finals with the Magic when they were like a super young team. They beat Jordan.
That one's a 1A, 1B.
Jordan retired two times, once in his prime, and no one ever says, oh, he didn't put all – he wasted his potential, the way they talk about Shaq.
There's really been –
I think it's because that they have this, like, idea of the Mamba mentality now, but, like, the Michael Jordan mentality from back in the day is, you have to be super competitive, all about basketball, just all about winning and things like that. And Shaq just had fun, you know?
Yeah.
He had a fun, enriching life with extracurricular activities outside of basketball, and I think people can't stand that. That's my take.
Shaq could have been an A-plus student, and instead he was a B-plus student who had, like, the most fun partying that anyone has ever had. And you know what? That's entirely fine.
And he made affordable shoe lines for kids and things like that. Like, he's doing all right for himself. He doesn't need this.
Yeah, I mean,
he also doesn't care.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't care at all.
I mean, it's
I think he's a bad basketball analyst now. Like, every time he's
funny.
Someone's like, hey, you're wrong. He's like, oh, how many rings you got?
It's funny. He's perfect.
This role is an entertainment value. He's a clown now, and that's okay.
And he enjoys
it. And an advertiser. He sells, like, everything.
Yeah.
So speaking of
manager, I guess. I don't know.
Putting in B-plus effort, what do we want to talk about with the Team USA their performance?
That wasn't B+. That was C-.
Yeah.
There's a bit B+.
Kevin Durant fouled out. Like, Bam Adebayo was the only good player on the team. There's a lot going on here. I mean, after the first few exhibition games, I actually said, like, there is a risk that Team USA does not win the gold medal this year. And obviously, you know, I think that people have this expectation of success with the Team USA team because that's kind of all we ever see. The last time they didn't win the gold medal, they came back and they won the gold medal immediately afterward because they're like, all right, we'll try this time. I think we may be in one of those down years where we are seeing a lot of players who, and we saw these clips circulating on Twitter, a lot of these players are hunting for fouls in ways that aren't called in international basketball. They are perhaps used to gaining free throws in certain ways, gaining points in certain ways that aren't rewarded. And then fouls and double dribble calls are a little bit more strict in other areas that I think they're not used to. We also have a lot of players who are coming off immediately from the playoffs.
Or the finals.
They hopped on a plane to Tokyo 2 days later after partying in Milwaukee.
After chugging champagne. Yeah.
Absolutely.
By the way. Oh, man.
I mean, there are a lot of factors in play here.
No, I just wanted to say as a joke real quick, Devin Booker's personal hell. He had to be on a private plane after losing the finals with, what, Drew Holiday? And
Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton.
He had to be on a private plane with Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton.
So they could lock him down one last time.
Exactly.
You know, you'd like to think they all just slept on that flight. But, you know, who knows?
Just so they could, like, get into
it. It's like a 20-hour flight to Tokyo, too.
Oh, yeah, it's long. There's no way. There's no way that was enjoyable for
Chris. Oh, boy.
He's just watching Space Jam 2 in, like, the back corner of the plane while they're laughing.
I still need to watch Space Jam 2.
I
love Space Jam 1. Not 90, but a significant portion of my interest in basketball because of Space Jam. So,
as it should be. No, so, I apologize for taking this off track, but the effort and, I mean, a lot of the decision-making stuff from USA Basketball has been weird.
Hey,
why was,
like,
Kevin Love was on the roster? Why was Kevin Love on the roster?
I don't know.
Kevin Love hasn't been good
for possible.
Years.
Greg Popovich isn't as good as he used to be. I think he's a little bit set in his ways at this point, and he's making some questionable decisions. Last year, he actually sat Bam Adebayo in favor of one of the Plumleys. Last time that there was a FIBA basketball Team USA. And part of the roster construction, I think, is kind of rough. Apart from Draymond, you don't really – Draymond and Drew now, but a lot of the guys are kind of shot creators of their own shots and not really playmakers. And I think that's been a bit of a struggle from what I've seen of Team USA right now.
There's always the worry when you get one of these teams together that, like, the players aren't going
to
learn how to play together very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's more of a shot creator.
This conversation isn't to take away from just the immense strides that international basketball has taken.
Oh, yeah.
Very true.
And, like, USA just lost to France. I think France is one of the best teams in the world right now. And that's, yeah.
I mean,
that's not that big of a stretch. Like, they've medaled right very now, highly, very, very consistently over the past several years.
Like, it used to be that if you wanted to, like, just a couple years ago, if you wanted to name, like, Team USA, you just start going off the best players in the world, like, top mm-hmm. five, whatever. Now it's like, you're like, oh, yeah, no. You know, Luka, no. You know,
Giannis, Jokic, no, Luka. No, that's like Jokic. Three, like, top 10 players right there who.
Yeah, not even top 10, top five, arguably.
Arguably, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, also, like, we're not playing LeBron, Steph.
I also think other countries kind of take this a little bit more seriously than America. Oh, absolutely. Does.
I mean, if I'm like one of the internationals, I mean, Greece didn't qualify this year, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but because Giannis had to play in the finals, basically. But, like, you know, Slovenia, Luka's got them there for the first time ever, maybe?
In a long time, at least.
And, you know, they did an interview with him and it said, like, yeah, like, winning the Olympics would almost be more meaningful than a championship in the NBA, mm-hmm. just because, like, you know, it means you beat the U.S. at some point.
And for some of these teams, this is all they're preparing for, like, all year. Like, are NBA. A lot of the Team USA is, like, NBA basketball players who, like we said, were just doing the playoffs and things like that. We saw Luis Scola, like, 42-year-old Luis Scola looking sexy as hell, come back. We saw Pau Gasol, who's, like, old. Playing for Spain. I think that a lot of these teams invest a lot of time specifically in working together and specifically in learning how to play as a team and play at the international level, which is, like I said, a little bit different from the NBA. And so I think talent-wise, right, Team USA is still the best in the world. And I don't think it's that close right now.
Of course not.
I think they're still like a level above everybody else. But I think that these other teams are able to make up that difference by caring a little bit more about learning the specific rules of international basketball, by playing together more and having more cohesion as a team, having more like roster construction going on there. And
I mean, hey, now, you know what?
Yeah.
For Team USA, they had Coach K be their coach for a long time before Pop took over. And honestly, I just came up with this right now. Maybe having college coaches wouldn't be such a big bad thing, because especially if you look at the way college basketball is now, like, you've got, you know, a bunch of guys who were, you know, the star of their high school teams and were better than everybody else by quite a lot. They come together for 1 year, you know, one short instance. They may never be together again. Mm-hmm. And you have to convince all these people to care about the national championship and to play at a level where they can win the national championship and not get upset by, you know, UMBC or whoever.
Hey, this is an incredible tag. I love this.
I agree with this 100%.
So I think maybe if we can get, like, you know, Calipari or, name another great college coach.
Well, I'm sure college coaches would love to get this right now, because past that, where now college athletes can profit off their own likeness.
And yeah,
now
I think it's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Like, the NCAA, I mean, the sponsorship thing, especially because also people don't realize, like, brands sponsor teams. Like, most of the time, like, your college team will be sponsored by, you know, Nike or Prince or Puma or whoever. And so that can bring money to the program that way.
Well, let me ask you this.
Colleges or the universities have already have to pay for facilities and room and board and food and education and stipends and all this other shit. So, like, I think making them, the university, pay more out of their pockets will be going to be difficult, especially for a lot of smaller schools. But endorsements, perfect.
Yeah.
These companies have tons of money they can just throw at players.
Let me ask you this. How much money do you think Zion Williamson would have made at that one?
Oh, my God. Ridiculous amount. Like,
a lot,
because it would have been like totally, it was absurd for so long. At this point, college athletes are basically professional influencers, right, in a lot of ways, and they have such a public presence that I think it would have been absurd for them to not, anytime they made money. There was a football player a few years back who made a YouTube channel, didn't mean to monetize it, but he accidentally did, and he became NCAA ineligible because of it. I think that it's absurd.
Destroying?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Destroying.
Oh, destroy this something else.
It was absurd at the level that we're at with how social media works now, with how sponsorships work now, where it's so easy. It's so integrated with the public personas that these athletes have at the professional level. College athletes were basically doing that. And for them to be NCAA ineligible because they were just kind of doing what their
persona was totally pushing
to do anyway.
Totally
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been absurd the longer it went on.
It was only a matter of time, really.
Yeah. I think it's probably better for college sports as a whole as well. I mean, I think it will eventually shift towards college sports maybe being kind of phased out, especially in basketball, for example.
Yeah, it'll be different. I think it'll be different eventually, where you're not seeing it as so much of this professional pipeline as it has been for a long time.
Yeah, which is, I think, a good thing, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But especially at the current moment, I think it actually will help the NCAA with some of those issues. Is like, oh, we might be losing players to like G League stuff or that kind of thing. It's like, oh, well. Yeah. You can come to the college level and probably get more in scholarships.
Well, I kind of figured this was coming the moment that the NBA announced their G League partnership thing, where it's like these high school kids can play a year in the G League and then be called up to the NBA. Like, also, I figured it was only a matter of time.
I just want to say that it's obviously a big blow, but even if, you know, the vast majority of future, you know, NBA lottery picks elect to not play in college, there will still be quite a few who do.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, there are future NBA players who don't do one and done. They play 2, 3, 4 years even and graduate.
Yep.
Because college will always be meaningful to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's going to be more important to some people that they attended college than other people, I think. Yeah. And I think it's...
And people will always want to watch college basketball. So
right.
Like,
that's the thing.
The sport isn't it really in any real
thing. The demand's always going to be there. It's just, what are you expecting out of it? And I think nowhere can this shift away from the NCAA as a pipeline to professional athletes.
Yeah.
Is it more apparent than in 2K my career? Because over the past 3 years, what have we seen? Less and less has it been about like the college stories, and we're seeing there was that one in 2K19, I think, where the guy he was injured, so he left college sports and then he like came back up through the G League or something like that. You know, storylines like that. This was not a serious enough point for you guys to like be reacting like this, but
I don't play 2K my career, so I want to know.
Yeah, I'm just lost in the dark, I'm gonna be honest.
Anyway, this was part of the transition I wanted to make because we saw LaMelo Ball recently play a little bit of professional basketball in the NBL over in Australia, and that worked out pretty well for him. He just won Rookie of the Year, right? Like, I mean, he basically got his older brother a job. LiAngelo Ball is expected to sign with the New Orleans Hornets. Not New Orleans, Charlotte Hornets. And... yeah, I think I'd expect to see going forward just more of a mix in terms of the pools of players that are drafted, in part because of the shift away from college sports as the only way for American players to get to the NBA, and also in part because of what we talked about. Foreign players are getting better at basketball. Yeah. Players from other countries are getting really good, and I think that it would be not doing your due diligence as a scout or as an NBA scout, as an executive, to not be looking at some of these overseas prospects and getting excited.
I mean, and also there's a trend that's been going on, which maybe won't happen as much anymore with the foreign leagues getting better, but the U.S. colleges also recruit good basketball players from overseas. I mean, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, it's kind of both ways now, and that's really interesting to me.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. My guess is that probably fewer international players will want to come to the U.S. and will instead choose to stay home and play in their home league. But
I mean, it worked out for Joel Embiid, who's on the worst team in the East. But
okay, Sam,
Cameroonian came to Kansas. He's doing well for himself. I think if he won the MVP, he didn't deserve it as much as Nikola Jokic, but he was right there in that conversation.
Seems like a good time to enter to our two cents
Right. I've been given a lot of those. I'll cede the floor to other people for now. But yeah, this is the segment of our show towards the end where we go around, give each of the hosts the floor to express their feelings for a little bit, whether it's about a specific topic that they didn't find time for in the show, or whether it's about something kind of related, but they have very strong feelings about. So anybody got a topic they want to bring up right here?
I haven't gotten the opportunity to really talk about this on the podcast, and it's entirely unrelated to any of the conversations we've been talking about today. But the NFL will be coming up upon us shortly. Preseason, and I mean, training camp's going on right now. Preseason's going to be coming up on us in a short amount of time. I'm from Tennessee. I'm a Titans fan. I'm looking forward to it. They traded for Julio Jones. I'm excited. That's really it. That's really all I have to say. But, you know, I'm excited to hopefully see some fireworks, hopefully, knock on wood, there's no injuries. I don't think the depth is necessarily there, but we had a really good season offensively last year. I think it will only be better, in all honesty. So,
very cool. Anybody else?
I guess I'll go next. So I feel like I have a few conflicting hopes happening with my sports team. So, like, I see what's going on with Team USA now. And on one hand, I think, I want them to go as far as possible. I want to see how far this team can take their potential. On the other hand, I wouldn't mind, you know, Kevin Durant getting as much rest as possible this season. I wouldn't mind getting eliminated early. It could be, I'm just saying there could be some benefits there. And I see this in other sports too, you know, NFL. I think Cam Newton could be a cool redemption story for this year for the Patriots. But on the other hand, with this already having so many young quarterbacks in the AFC East, I'd be lying if I didn't say I want to see Mac Jones, New England Patriots quarterback. I just want to see that experience. I've had too many takes on NFL draft stuff and young NFL players to not want to see how McCorkle Jones from Alabama, the well-known QB factory, does at Gillette Field.
I'm a Patriots fan, and when he was drafted, I wasn't a big Mac Jones believer. I was pretty suspicious of him. Even now, if he doesn't start for very long, for a long time, I'm okay with that. But I'm now fully back in the future.
Hey, man, I got
I want him to do well.
I got a Disney Channel villain as our new quarterback. I was definitely a little skeptical of, I don't know, depending on who you ask, Mormon Mahomes or Mormon Manziel. We'll see, man. I just want to know for sure soon. Yes, that's my take.
All right. I want to talk real quick. There was a topic that Ethan brought up about how, you know, it'd be okay if Kevin Durant came home a little bit early from the Olympics. For me, I'm kind of sad that Bradley Beal stayed home from the Olympics due to being in health and safety protocols for COVID-19, because he and Jason Tatum are tight like this, all right? Like, they have family babysitting each other's kids. They've known each other since they're both from St. Louis. And this is in part because there is an upcoming rumor. There is one that we've heard about trade talks for Bradley Beal for a really long time. And, you know, partially because people don't want to see this incredibly gifted scorer just languish on the Wizards for the rest of his career. He signed a big contract with the Wizards not too long ago, and it kind of felt like he was happy where he was. But for the first time, I'm starting to hear, like, credible rumors. Hey, Bradley Beal might ask for a trade, guys. And
are you implying, Sam?
Well, I'm not really implying anything. The same report said that if he requests a trade, the Celtics are going to be one of his preferred trade destinations. And this brings up a really interesting conversation, because anytime a star player is available for trade to the Celtics, everybody's like, hey, we got to trade Jaylen Brown, all right? Do whatever it takes. We got to trade Jaylen Brown. Shut up. You guys are all so stupid. Okay, I didn't get a chance to talk about this kind of turmoil that happened with Ainge stepping down and Brad Stevens stepping up to be the new president of basketball operations over at the Boston Celtics. I think it's a much welcome change. I like Ime Udoka a lot. I like what he brings to the table. It's going to be great. It's the it was a very apt comparison on Twitter. They were saying it's like taking out the disc, blowing on it, and putting it back in, right? Yeah, I'm happy. I think that there's going to be real change in that organization because of that. I think the head coach being hired especially is one that'll help with the players a lot. And any time that we have one of these guys like Damian Lillard, I think he's probably going to be available for trade pretty soon. Bradley Beal seems like he's going to be available. Why do we have to trade Jaylen Brown, all right? Let's ask this question. The salaries match up without him. Right, you can pay three guys on an NBA basketball team. That's just how it works right now. And if you're talking about asset value, you guys are so greedy, okay? Every team whose star player is leaving is so greedy. They think that they're going to get an all-star level player plus a talented young prospect plus like five draft picks. I know that happened for Houston because Daryl Morey left behind an incredible infrastructure there, and that executive team is just genius. But this doesn't happen anytime that a star requests a trade. It doesn't happen anymore, all right? We have talented young prospects in Robert Williams. I think Peyton Pritchard had an underrated rookie season. I think that Romeo Langford might become something. I'm not really super sold on him. But there are assets on that team that make those salaries work. At this point, if you don't know what Jaylen Brown is and what he can become, I think that he can easily be the number three guy on a championship-winning basketball team, much in the vein of Jrue Holiday and kind of what Chris Middleton did. But every year that I've watched this kid play basketball, he has learned something new. He has gotten better at a different aspect of the game. And at this point, like, the sky is the limit for those two players, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I don't want to separate those guys for at least three more years. I want to see what that core can become. Anybody else is on the table. Take Marcus Smart. I love that guy, but he's not the player that he used to be, or at least he wasn't this season. I mean, Al Horford's back. I don't think that anybody's going to be taking that contract that the Thunder gave him. But, yeah, I mean, there are so many ways that you can make a trade work if, and this is a big if the star asking for a trade really wants to go to that team, the team's going to make it work, and you don't have to give up the moon and stars to get Bradley Beal under contract for the next couple of years.
Oh, they're the Wizards. They'll take a bunch of picks.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Washington Wizards. When's the last time the Washington Wizards have won a trade? Russell Westbrook for John Wall.
They'll take Fournier and some picks.
Right, yeah. Oh, Evan Fournier is on this team. Take him.
TJ, you want to close this out?
Oh, yeah. I forgot I had to give one, too. I guess my sort of hot take is one. And worth, at least one thing I want to talk about was that the NFL that's coming here, they're going to have this new policy for COVID, which is if you have an outbreak amongst unvaccinated players on your team, not vaccinated, unvaccinated, and you have to forfeit. If you can't, the game is canceled, you forfeit and you lose. If the game is rescheduled, then you have to deal. You have to cover all the costs, including for the other team. Which is, I think, like, which is like a kind of a nice change for the NFL. And they don't do like things like this very often, where like they're both like firm, but in a way that makes sense. Sometimes they're really harming people for no reason, or not harming people when it doesn't make sense. I think this time they're actually doing something that makes a lot of sense. So I like that. Also, if you have an outbreak among vaccinated people, which happens. I can.
Delta variant's crazy, guys. Stay safe out there.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm, yeah. Yeah. Which does happen. Like, obviously, it's nowhere near as bad as you're vaccinated, but it does happen. Then, like, you're fine. They'll cover everything. They'll move the moon and stars like they did for all the teams this year. But, yeah, so a real, like, serious policy, which I like. You know, maybe DeAndre Hopkins can get his act together. And hopefully not get COVID this season, because that would be bad, because then we wouldn't have DeAndre Hopkins. And some fantasy managers would be very upset.
All right. Well, one final note. I was watching a little bit of the Olympics, and It just stuck out to me that they weren't able to afford rebranding to Tokyo 2021, so all the basketball courts said Tokyo 2020. That's man, tough. The Olympics are a disaster.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They had to fulfill the prophecy of Akira, man.
Hey, you gotta wait exactly, for one, of course.
You're correct. I mean, so much of this has already been themed around anime. I feel like it'd be a travesty if they didn't pay homage to that one, but...
Yeah, Olympics are unfortunate. I was really excited for these when they were announced. It looked like they really had their act together, and then COVID.
Yeah, I'm much too big a weeb to not have been like super excited for a Tokyo Olympics, and
right
here we are.
But you know what wasn't a disaster was this podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We are online at sportsconvos.com. We are on Twitter at @BRNSportsConvos, and we, your lovely hosts, are signing off. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.